Welcome to episode 6 of Old Fox Young Fox, where two worlds collide over business issues we all face, with your hosts, Oliver Happy and Jeremy Woolwich. So what are we going to talk about today, Jeremy?
Well, I think we're going to be talking about brands and branding.
So do I, so that's good news.
Great.
Good news for everyone.
I love this subject and I've been involved in it for years and years and years. And I'm fascinated by people's attitudes towards brands. People love brands and it's everybody talks about brands, but very often from not a lot of knowledge. And what I'd like to do really is just talk a little bit about so people get a slightly deeper understanding what brands are and how it impacts on their business.
Okay. All right. So let's start with the basics. What is a brand and why should we care about it?
Well, what I'd rather do is just reframe it slightly and talk about reputation and how you manage your reputation, because actually that's the important thing. People buy products, they create opportunities for you, they offer you employment. All of these things are based on their perception of you as a company, as a product, as an individual. And that's all about your image, it's all about your reputation. And therefore, if that is the thing that's the magic ingredient that encourages people to get involved with you, that's the bit that you've got to manage. And that, for me, is what a brand is. It's
reputation.
It's the reputation. It's what happens inside someone's head when they think about you. It's what people say about you when you're not in the room. For me, that's a brand. The name that you use, the symbols that you use, the visual identity that you create around this reputation, we end up calling a brand mark. I mean, and that's very often, I think, what people mistake with a brand. It's the brand mark versus the reputation of the organization.
Right, right. So why should we care about that? Why should we care about how a brand and a brand mark affects our reputations?
Well, because clearly, if people are making buying decisions based on their your reputation, you have to manage it. The point is, some people think it's just flower arranging. Somebody once said to me, Jeremy, this is all just flower arranging, isn't it? and I can understand that point of view, but it isn't. It's actually critical. It's critical to the business. You have a reputation. You create an image, whether you want one or not. Mm. You can do nothing. But, you know, somebody once said to me, you know, all I have to do is produce a good product and that's all I need to do. I don't need to do any advertising. I don't need to do anything about branding. I don't need to communicate. I just need to produce a good product or provide a good service. And that's all I need to do. And unfortunately, it isn't. People create a reputation for you. They create an image for you, whether you help them or not. The only issue is whether you choose to proactively manage the process, whether you proactively try and manage what it is people think about you.
Hmm. Okay, so by that token, everybody needs a brand. Is that what you're saying?
I think everybody is a brand.
I see.
It's just some are managed and some are not managed. There can be a good brand, a positive brand, or otherwise. And the question is, if you want to be a good brand, if you want the brand to work for you, then you have to manage it. And okay. I think there's a whole process and a whole way of thinking about how you do that.
Okay, so we'll get onto that in a second. But as soon as you say something you need to manage, that sounds like time and energy. If I think of myself as a medium-sized business, a small business owner, someone who works in one of those businesses, I think to myself, is this something that only big businesses really can afford to do?
No, I think that everybody has to do it. I don't think it's an option. I think they have to do it. It's just a function of scale. And also it's a function of just stepping back and thinking clearly about who you are, what you are, what your products are trying to achieve, thinking about your target audiences and what they want, and manage that process.
Okay.
And I think most people are doing that anyway, but perhaps not in a formalized way and not thinking of it as being part of how you create and manage a brand.
So what are some examples of informal ways that people build their brand?
Well, informal ways are every time you meet somebody and have a conversation with them, when you're representing a company, you are creating an image. They have an image of you. The moment you walk through the door, they're making decisions about you simply by the way you're dressed, by what you say. I mean, they say that within the first 4 seconds, people have already made up their mind about you. So the question then becomes, are you going to try and manage that 4 seconds or not? And that's exactly the same with the brands. Everything you do as an organization, everything your people do, every experience they have with your service or your product is influencing the overall perception they have of your organization.
So are there any businesses that don't need to brand themselves?
Good question. I can't think of one. I'm sure there's someone somewhere, but I can't think of one.
I spent a bit of time mulling this over when I probably should have been sleeping. And
I mean, yeah, that's more of a... Have you thought of one that doesn't need...
Well, it racked my brain and I thought the only time I can think of a brand not being required is when customers aren't required. And a business that really doesn't need to increase the number of customers they have. But even in that instance, the customers they do have are really important.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that anyway, because you're not operating in a vacuum. Mm. You're always going to be competitors who want your customers.
Mm.
And if people think they know you and you've become a little bit out of date, and then somebody comes along who's got a product that's comparable with yours, or they're presenting it as comparable with yours, but perhaps more modern, more relevant, has a few more gadgets or whatever attached to it. Or if you're in consultancy, you have a more innovative way of thinking. If that's what they're presenting, then that can be very attractive. So my view is you're always having to maintain and upgrade and update your image and your reputation in the normal course of events.
Okay, so is developing a brand something that I can do myself, or is it something I need help with?
I think that you're doing it anyway, but it's always useful to have some professionals involved, not least because they're able to be objective. They're able to be more objective about your business and about how you're presenting yourself than you are. The most important thing, in my view, about all of this area is to understand what people are really thinking about you. You then have to understand what you're thinking about yourself, and you're looking for the mismatch. I mean, providing what you're saying about yourself is consistent with what people think about you, then that's fine. And if that's their experience, then you have a consistency, which is really what you're trying to achieve. If there's a mismatch between what you think, how you behave, and what people's experiences are of you and what they think, that's when you start to have a problem. They say that it's your best friend who tells you whether you've got BO. You know, not a stranger. I mean, most people try to please you. What you want are people who will give you the truth about a situation. If your product actually isn't very good, if your service isn't as good as you think it is, you need people who will actually tell you that such that you can do something about it. If you do it yourself, if you go out to your customers and ask them, are we producing great product? Are we providing a great service? In most cases, they'll say yes. Because they don't want to offend you, particularly if you operate, you know, in England. You know, people don't like to complain. They don't like to upset people. If you have an independent perspective on it, where someone who's got no axe to grind is going in and asking these people for their opinions and their experiences, you're much more likely to get to the truth of the matter. And then you can work with it. You can do something about it. So I would argue that certainly in terms of gathering the information, it's always useful to use an external consultant, or someone who's detached from the business, who's got refined skills in terms of asking these sort of questions. And then you move on to the next bit, which is, okay, what do you do with that information in terms of developing communication strategies, in terms of developing the brand mark, making decisions about what the company should be called, perhaps, organizational group structures and what they call brand architectures. All of those are specialist skills, and they are learned skills, and therefore, if you're operating in that more sophisticated environment, you definitely need to work with people who've got those refined skills.
Mm. Okay.
It's not something you can do yourself.
Okay. I've spent most of my working career in B2B, business to business. I've had a short stint and a couple of occasions in B2C, business to consumer. Wouldn't you say that business to consumer brands in general get more effort, more finance than B2B brands?
Almost certainly, because the risks are so much higher. I mean, I used to work with people like Mars Foods and so on, where, you know, a very small movement in market share represents millions of pounds of, you know, additional profit or lost revenue. So by definition, they developed very sophisticated tools for managing their reputation and building their brands. That's certainly true. But equally, what happens is that these techniques filter down through the different levels of organisation. So they might start off with FMCG marketing.
You can see fast-moving consumer goods.
Yeah, fast-moving consumer goods.
Supermarket brands.
Absolutely. But then you notice that when they started, then it went into retail. you know, high street retailing. Mm. Then they became much more conscious of brands and communicating and so on and so forth. And then with the privatization of the water industry and the electricity industry and all that sort of stuff, where the government's trying to get people to buy shares, suddenly you notice that, you know, the old, boring old traditional electricity company started to communicate and started to become much more conscious of how it looked and how it presented itself and so on and so forth. I was involved, for example, in the launch of PowerGen back in the day, and they were very keen to present themselves as being very different from the traditional, staid, boring utility. And they wanted to present themselves as being contemporary and innovative, and they came up with names and identities accordingly. And then it became local authorities and housing associations. You know, everybody now is becoming much, much more conscious of what people think of them. And they're becoming much more influenced by what their customers are demanding.
So bringing this to the level of the small business owner or the small business employee, how do they go about managing their brand?
Well, I think the most important thing is to know what their customers currently think about them.
Okay.
And to ensure that that's what they want them to be thinking.
So what sort of things do they need to be asking?
Well, I'd go back to first principles. The first thing, obviously, we're talking really in broad terms, we're talking about marketing. And marketing is about understanding who your customers are, meeting their needs at a profit. So you go back to first principles. Who are your customers? What do they want? What are you providing? And are you doing that in a way that's competitive? Who are your competitors? Who are you up against? How are they positioning themselves? What are they saying about their products? And how can you position your offer as being better or more attractive or whatever than your competitors? And the only way you find that out is by doing an analysis of A, what do your customers want? B, who else is offering something to them? And C, how you stack up against it. And once you do that exercise, then you start to get a sense of how you should be changing your approach in order to compete effectively with these other people. That may or may not impact on your brand. It's a natural course of business that most people are doing anyway. But if there's a significant shift that you need, then again, you've got tools that enable you to use your brand to help you achieve that. For example, a change of name, a change of identity forces people out in the market to think of you differently because something very fundamental about your business has changed. And therefore, by definition, they will be saying to you, what's happened? What's changed? Which gives you the opportunity to go in there with a different proposition and start to shift perceptions from where they are to where you want them to be.
Okay, so how about giving us some more examples of moments that you would know that your brand needs an overhaul?
Well, a lot of organizations have changed beyond recognition over the last few years. They've been forced to. But if you go out and talk to customers and they're still thinking of you as you used to be, then you know you've got a problem.
So any organisation that's changed significantly?
I think any organisation that's changed significantly, where their customers or their opinion forms, the key target audiences that they've got, where their perceptions of you are still stuck in the past, they're still thinking of you as you used to be. And it might be you were an organisation with problems. I mean, if you've had a particular set of problems, like the banks, for example, you know, all of them need to just change the way they operate. And then once they've got that bit sorted, they need to change how they present themselves to reflect that.
Some might say they may do it the other way around.
Well, my argument is you can fool some of the people some of the time. My view is you have to change the experience before you start talking about it. There was a time when, again, back in the day, British Rail, when it was a nationalised industry, had a dreadful reputation. And someone came along and said, look, you need to change your image, because they were lining them up for privatisation and all that sort of stuff. And they came up with this classic thing that said, British Rail, we're getting there. And it was this all this promise about all these things that were going to change. It was great, very, very impressive, until you went to the railway station the following morning to get on your train to London. And the train was late, the carriage was filthy dirty, you stood all the way to London, and it cost you a fortune. And your first reaction was, they're not getting there. Mm. And it totally discredits anything else you say as an organisation.
I can think of another example with a bank in New Zealand called ANZ. They had a campaign which was, yes, you can have a mortgage. Yes, the Yes Bank.
Okay.
And I remember a lecturer saying, what happens when they don't give you a mortgage?
Exactly.
The Yes, you can't have a mortgage bank. And it all fell apart.
It's this whole thing about setting up expectations that you can't deliver. And the thing about brands is there has to be an absolute consistency between what you say about the brand and what people's experience of the brand is. If you haven't got that consistency, you're dead in the water.
So given there's very limited time for anybody in any role these days, how do they get a feel for what the experience of the brand is?
Well, the best way is to talk to customers. You know, it's all, I mean, there's nothing new about any of this. When people operated producing a chair in a little village in Middle England in the sort of 16th century, they got direct feedback from their customers. All that's happened is things have grown in scale and we are more detached from our customers. It's simply a question of getting more in touch with your customers and understanding them. And this is the whole area of customer insight. They give it fancy names now, but actually all it's about is talking to your customers in an authentic way and finding out what their real experiences are with you and your products and trying to adapt what you have to meet their changing needs.
And as more and more businesses go online, I would imagine that there's more and more detachment from customers.
Yeah, I think that introduces some really, really interesting challenges. It's this whole thing about transparency, and it's so difficult nowadays to hide. I mean, if your organization does anything wrong, you know, even in good faith, before you know it, there's a whole social media storm that somehow you have to manage, and your reputation can be damaged very, very easily. You know, and that's why if you have strong brands, they give you an element of protection in those situations. But coming back to the point I made earlier, it has to be based in a really authentic and real core values. You have to get your core values as an organization sorted so that you, with absolute conviction, know that you're doing the right thing such that whenever you are challenged on it, you can go back to the fact that you've done the right thing. Maybe you've made a mistake, but fundamentally the organization has integrity and you have core values that are consistent with your brand.
Mm. Okay. What are some of the main branding mistakes you've seen people making?
I think sometimes the first thing is that people start designing stuff using design as a substitute for making really important decisions about an organization, about how it should be positioned, and about getting the fundamentals of the organization right.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, well, it comes back to this idea that says there has to be a consistency between what you do as an organization and what you say about it. If you go straight into the design process, it's all about talking. It's not about the doing. It's not about getting the fundamentals right. It's just a very superficial sort of solution and usually doesn't work very well.
Mm.
The other thing is that when you start dealing with the aesthetics of it, the colours and, you know, the symbols, without really thinking of it in terms of being part of a communication strategy, and the idea that things like names and symbols and colours and all these things are simply tools that enable you to communicate certain things about your organisation. So you have to think of these things in the context of your overall business and communication strategy and not just as a piece of design or frippery.
What trends have you seen in branding? What's changing?
Good question. What's changing? I think the whole move online has changed a lot. To be honest, I don't see anything fundamental changing in brands themselves. The thinking is still the same. You're still responding to customers. You're still using a sort of design and names as a tool to help you communicate certain values about your organization, certain things about your organization. So that in itself hasn't changed. I think people perhaps are more sophisticated in their approach to it. And equally, audiences are more sophisticated in terms of how they interpret things as well. So perhaps you've got to be even more professional. Certainly, the elements underpinning the brand have changed. I think it's no longer just about how good your television is and whether your colours are sharper than somebody else's television. It's as much now to do with where the television's made and whether you're using slave labour or whether you're recycling things and all of that sort of stuff. I think that sort of underlying element is playing more and more a role in the way people think. People are becoming much more discerning. They're making choices about who they want to do business with rather than just simply looking at the product or the service. So I think that values thing is becoming more and more relevant. And how you communicate that without it appearing to be, you know, just a piece of marketing flannel is quite an art. And that comes back to the core values of the business and whether the business has real integrity.
I really like the talk about the ethos of the business and the desire to keep things genuine. That's something that's really close to my heart. And a lot of businesses that I've not chosen to work with, I felt were not genuine.
right. And I think that people are making those sort of decisions, even when it comes to choosing employers who they'll work with.
Mm.
You know, and there are all sorts of organisations that I know of. I won't buy their product, not because the product's not good, but I don't like them. I don't like what they stand for. I don't like what they do. And I'm making some of my decisions on that sort of basis. And actually, that's fine because there are alternatives. You can do that.
Would you also say that the access to alternatives has exploded?
I think it has. Nowadays, what they say is that you don't have, if you're developing a new product, you have probably 6 months before somebody else has come out with a very sort of similar sort of product. The lead time you have nowadays is almost nothing. I was told that Sony have 20,000 new product in research at any one moment in time. You know, you just don't have the opportunities that you might have had once upon a time to really get a new product out there and established. So there's always going to be competition, always alternatives, and people will be buying who they think you are as an organisation as much as anything else. I'm not saying that you don't still have to compete aggressively on product features and on price and all that sort of stuff. I'm just saying this is another layer that you really have to compete on. And many organisations aren't equipped for it. They don't really understand it. But there's an opportunity for organisations to differentiate and to gain competitive advantage.
Very good. So I think that there's plenty of opportunity for us to bring others in and hear them talk about their brands and maybe some issues they've had with their brands and what they've done about them.
And also to talk about the design process. Because whilst I've minimised it here, actually, I think that's also really important and how you go about things like choosing a name, which seems fairly obvious, but actually it isn't, and how you create a brand mark, I think is a really interesting area to explore. Because I think there's huge opportunities for people to professionalise in those areas.
Mm. Very good. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
So do you want to introduce the reflection section for...
Yeah. Now we just want to reflect a little bit on what was said earlier. From my point of view, I'm not going to talk too much, but I just was very conscious that even whilst I was talking, there was quite a lot of jargon that was coming out, and I think it's important to try and demystify it. And particularly in this area where there are no definitive description for what a brand is. And the language used, I mean, what's the difference between a visual identity and a logo? I mean, so don't get too hung up on the language, the jargon. It's actually the ideas that underpin it that's important. And the only other thing I wanted to raise was Ollie asked the question, are there any organisations out there who don't need to worry about brands and about managing their reputation? And I want to calm down definitively now that I've thought about it and said, no, there isn't. Because everybody in any situation is actually trying to influence the way in which people respond to you. You're trying to influence buying behaviour, buying decisions. You're trying to influence whether they employ you. You're trying to influence whether they accept an argument that you're making or not. So we're all at some level selling, be it an idea or a product, and therefore recognising that perceptions will influence the way in which people respond to you. You're trying to sell to them something. We all have to be conscious of our reputation, our image, and try and manage it.
Mm. All right, now let's throw this to our youngest fox, Ty. What do you think?
Building on that, I think it's important to think about what kind of expectation you can set and if you can actually come through with it. So it's important to not set up expectations when you know that you're not able to deliver on it. So keep their expectations realistic, basically.
What do you see in the market that doesn't suggest that?
So... for example, so on Instagram specifically, there's this thing called Fit Tea, where they have very fit people that go to gym a lot advertise this tea. And what they're saying is that that tea will help them getting slimmer and getting the body they want. But what they're not saying is that you actually have to work out as well and not just drink the tea. And that's a very typical small letters. But when you see it from an outside perspective, you just think, oh, I just drink the tea and I'll look like I'll get that six pack, or I'll get that slim waist that I want. And that's what I'm thinking as well, is that they give these expectations of people that don't know much about the fitness industry, about health, about how to eat right. And it's give this simple solution that if you drink this tea, you'll become skinny.
And when they don't?
When they don't, they're average Joe, basically. That they have to put in the hours at a gym as well. There's just one of the examples I could think of where it's not directly false advertising, but it's setting up an expectation that I don't believe you can follow through.
Yeah. And what do you think that does for repeat purchase?
As one-off purchase. I did that. I have to admit, I did that. I bought the tea. The only thing that happened is that nothing happened, actually. I could have just bought green tea from a typical store as well. Same thing.
So did you buy it again or not?
No, of course not. I had a few friends. We tried it just to see if it actually works, just out of curiosity. We bought it and nothing happened. I only used it once. Two times maybe. And then I was like, no. Then you see the brand a different way. Because I had this type of expectations where I would get a flat stomach. But then again, I just, it was just old me.
Okay. And one of the key things for me is I've observed in marketing teams, the team being given a product, this new product's coming out, it's ready to go, make it look good, get it ready to ship on this date. And so we go out and we have a look and we look at what the competitors are doing. We have a think about the product and we think, gee, it looks, it, they tell us that it's really quick to install and that it lasts a lot better than the competitors and it's easier to use. Are any of those actually the case? Because we make those bullet points on the flyer, on the website, on the ad, on the video. We put that all live, but is it correct? Are we setting a reasonable expectation? And I think a good example of that where expectations have been unrealistically set or that marketing team has got too far away from the reality of how the brand is actually experienced as political parties. So if we look at Brexit and we look at that whole process of that campaign, a large number of people in PR and marketing and advertising have told me that the reason that we have Brexit is because the Brexit campaign was a better run campaign. Politically speaking, they were better at generating awareness and getting people to buy into their brand. So put that to aside for a moment as we listen to the seagulls in the background. The reality is that what people bought is not what they had delivered. And there is a lot of cognitive dissonance or a difference between our decisions and our experience where people say, but I voted for Brexit, but then the people that were bringing Brexit retired the next day and quit. And that just created this vacuum where what people bought is not what they expected.
You can take that to another level when you're looking at what's happening in the States with Donald Trump and so on. And the Fox News and some of the things that have been going on with Fox News and Breitbart, where major advertisers have withdrawn advertising campaigns from those media because they don't like what those organisations are saying. And don't want to be associated with it because they know that their customers are making their own buying decisions and they're not going to buy from them if they think they have those views. You're not going to get a Mexican who's going to choose to buy from an organization that believes all Mexicans should be thrown out of the United States. So these things have real world consequences when consumers are starting to operate in a more sophisticated way in terms of who they choose to buy from.
And that leads to the next thought, which is, so I'm listening to this podcast and I understand what you're saying about brand and it all makes sense. And I know that I need to understand what my customers think of me so I can make sure that my brand is aligned with that and consistent with that. But how do I find out what my customers think of me easily and quickly and with the resources that I have and the time that I have? And I think that's something that we'll explore in some other episodes.
And the other thing we're going to explore is this whole phenomena of corporate social responsibility. And how organizations are trying to respond to the fact that their customers have higher expectations of them in terms of the values to which they operate.
All right, so let's just test the levels. Do you want to have a bit of a chat?
Sure. Yes. Good afternoon, Ollie.
Do you want to say something a bit loud?
I wouldn't be speaking this loudly. I'm not comfortable speaking that loudly. I'm much more comfortable speaking like this. Speaking normally. I've done enough talking.
Right.
Is that live?
Yes. Oh, what,